Dan, and welcome to another episode of Voices from SA. My name is Nicholas Claude. This week I chat to a rising star and, I'm sure, a future South African jazz legend, Tandi Ntuli. Tandi started piano lessons at the age of four and has since completed a BMus from the University of Cape Town. Her debut album, The Offering, was released 4 years ago, and her latest album, Exiled, was released at the beginning of 2018. I'm happy to say that I will be featuring a composition from both of those albums during this episode, so listen up for those. We had a really good chat. We spoke about a number of things, including the inspiration she gets from music from across the continent and her need to feel that inspiration from Africa, the foundation she got from her classical training, and the joy she gets from traveling around the world and experiencing new places and people. Tandi Ntuli, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to meet you. I think I saw you, it was what, 6 weeks ago you were here?
About a month back.
Yeah.
With Rebirth, of course.
We're at the, we're sitting actually, funnily enough, in the Orbit Jazz Club down in Bromfontein. And this is where Tandi and her band played a couple of weeks back, a really beautiful, beautiful concert. And I suppose, Tandi, it's quite appropriate that we are here because this club has played a very significant role in the process around which you released your first album, The Offering, mm-hmm. that was 4.5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about that and what your thinking was behind, because it was really about you taking the decision that you wanted to be an independent mm-hmm. musician outside of a corporate music structure.
Sure.
Why did you take that decision?
To be an independent artist.
Yes.
Well, I think it was just based on the fact that everyone around me was doing it as well. It wasn't a highly intellectualized decision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were people that I had gone to school with, that I was friends with, Bokani Dyer, Kyle Shepherd, I think he was signed, but it wasn't out of the ordinary to see people recording independently. So it was something that I thought of doing. And I think the control of being able to not have to wait for a record label to give you the go-ahead was why I did it that way anyway, instead of looking for people to give me the funding.
Had you been playing for quite a while? You would have been, what, in your mid-20s then when you released The Offering. Had you been playing more as a sort of session musician up until that time?
Yes. So I actually only got introduced to jazz music in university. Well, as a craft, per se, not listening to it.
Okay.
So I started gigging, session freelancing in my second year. That was 2008.
You were at, you were doing a BMus at UCT,
yes,
correct?
Yes, that's correct. And I started playing with different bands, you know, as it goes.
And this was pop, rock, I mean, whatever was going on.
Mostly
at that
jazz,
time?
Though. Mostly
okay,
jazz.
All right.
Because I was studying jazz, so I was with a lot of people who wanted to play jazz. We'd do gigs where we play standards, do corporate gigs here and there, play at, there was in Cape Town, there was a small little place called Tagore's, which I think honed a lot of creative energy. A lot of people tested out their music there.
Right.
That was the first place I actually started playing my original music.
Helped build a scene down there in a way.
Absolutely.
When you say, I mean, what was your, when you made the decision, because you learned the piano, you started learning the piano at a very young age, but you, had you had the idea that you were going to always be a professional musician, or what were you thinking when you went to university to study music? What was the vision that you had then?
Well,
if you say jazz wasn't really part of your musical scene, even.
Yes, it's strange because when I went to university, I was sure that I was going to be a musician. So I think when I left high school, I was already pretty sure that this is what I wanted to do. But when I got to university, I was actually initially enrolled for a general degree, which is a classical degree,
right.
Having had a classical background.
Yeah.
And I think there was somewhere where I thought somehow studying a BMAS general degree was going to help me become a musician, a professional musician, which in hindsight probably would not have done so. It would have probably made me a concert pianist or something.
Mm.
Because
that's more the classical path.
More the classical path.
Right. But very technical.
Yes, very technical. Extremely difficult as well. Like, I think it's extremely difficult to be a recognized concert pianist globally.
Yeah.
But what helped me was taking a gap year after my matric year, because I went, I just took time to, like, think, you know. I think I always recommend a gap year, because I think at 18, I had no idea about what I have no idea about.
Mm.
But then I went to the UK. My sister was studying there at the time, so I just went to stay with her. Got a part-time job, you know. Met some people there. One of the guys I met was a pianist called Francis, and he was improvising, which was completely foreign to me at the time.
Coming from that very structured classical training.
Coming from, you see music on the paper, that's how you make music. Mm. So I saw him playing, and then I asked him what song that is. I thought he had probably memorized the song, but he actually was improvising, and he told me that I should look into jazz. And that's when jazz became a thing that I actually started thinking about. You know.
And who did you then, can you remember who you were listening to in those early sort of days of your introduction to jazz? Who were the musicians that were inspiring you, particularly pianists, or were there other musicians as well?
It's amazing, because it's almost like I went right into it. On my birthday that year, my brother bought me a Begim Seleku best of CD. I don't know where it is now, but he bought me that. And also my sister had an album of Moses Molalekwa, which I came across, which I really...
So it was South African jazz.
It was South African jazz that really, like...
Kicked it off.
But like I said, I actually did grow up listening to a lot of jazz through my father's collection of music.
Yes.
Abdullah Ibrahim is definitely someone that I was very much accustomed to his music growing up. But I think
he's quite a technical guy, isn't he?
Sure, he is a technical guy. And I think you only realize in hindsight that, oh, this has been music influencing me all along. But you don't call it that.
No, you don't realize it,
I
suppose,
realize
half the time.
You don't realize that, yes.
You started playing piano at the age of 4.
Mm.
And, apparently, you were your mother's last chance to have a child to finally learn the piano.
Yes.
Did you enjoy it did you feel a kind of connection with the instrument right from the start, or was it a bit of a chore in those early years?
To be honest, I think it was a bit of a chore, only because as a child, you just want to play outside with everybody, and I remember it was always. It wasn't that I wasn't allowed to play, but I always just had to practice before I go and play outside.
Mm. And your homework, isn't it?
Yes. And I think that part of it was a bit of a chore. Mm.
I can imagine. I mean, every day?
Every day, yes. But when my mother would say, look, if you don't want to do this, you know, she'd get upset that my piano teacher's complaining that I don't practice. And she'd say, look, if you want to stop, you can stop. Then I'd be like, no, I don't want to stop.
Okay.
So I do think
there was something.
There was a love for the piano. Even I think that it was the practicing that I didn't enjoy. It's a very lonely thing to do, you know. Like,
yeah, I imagine.
The family's sitting watching TV and you have to go and practice your scales of all things.
That, yeah, yeah. And that was very much the sort of Royal College of Music kind of
I went through UNISA,
program.
But it was excruciating.
Yeah. Mm. Well, your family, your parents, when you were growing up, what were they doing?
You mean professional?
Yes.
They're both doctors.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, medical doctors.
And where did you grow up?
In Soshanguve.
And And that was with how many? Do you have brothers and sisters then?
Yes, I'm the last of five.
Oh my word.
Yes, I'm the last of
five.
That's
a big gang.
It is a big gang. And we had cousins also who grew up with us, so it was a massive gang.
Oh, a big family. Yeah. One of those houses.
Yeah, but great fun, yeah. Great memories. I think I really learned a lot of creativity from growing up in such a big family.
Yeah. My sister has four kids, and there's quite a lot of energy.
It is a lot of energy and lots of very different personalities. Mm. I really salute my parents because...
especially working as full-time doctors. I mean, there must have been long days and then having to deal with the crazies.
Crazy children and all very strong personalities. Like, I think I'm probably the quietest at home, which everyone looks at me and thinks, really?
What the heck?
But yeah, I really enjoyed my childhood.
And your high school, where was that?
That was also in Pretoria at St. Mary's DSG.
Oh, okay. So that's quite a good school, isn't it? I
yes.
mean, you would say quite a fancy establishment. How was experience for you? I mean,
it was a good school. I really enjoyed high school. I enjoyed school in general. Because I think I just love being around friends.
Yeah.
And I was in boarding school and I was in high school. So it was just so great to be like
by yourself.
100% with my friends. Mm. And it's not a massive school as well. So you don't get that overwhelming feeling.
You're not swamped, yeah. And were you were studying piano then at high school as well, all through your high school years?
Yes.
At the school?
No, I had a private teacher until... I was in standard 8 till I did my last grade because she got quite old, so she stopped teaching.
Right.
And then after that, I went for a year or two to the school's...
through the school's system,
department,
as it were.
Yeah.
Yeah. When was the kind of moment then that you realized... I mean, obviously you'd made a decision in your mind... But that's one thing. And then another thing to realize, okay, this can actually work. I mean, were you still quite young then when you thought, okay, this is actually going to work for me, that you have the confidence to play?
The confidence, no, absolutely not. But what I did...
Is that something you still struggle with, confidence?
I don't think so, because I think it's something that gets practiced out of you. You know, the more you play, the easier it becomes to play. I mean, I still get nervous, especially if I'm on stages that are foreign to me. But I think I've evolved
past that. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Also because I think what classical music instilled in me is the need to be perfect almost, you know.
Just technically.
Technically playing... There was such an emphasis on doing things right, you know.
Yeah.
You have to play the right notes, right phrasing, right tempo, you know.
Yeah.
And obviously, this is something I learned later on in life when I grew up. There is a lot of room for interpretation. Even within classical music.
Sure.
But whilst you're still learning, it just feels like there's this pressure of being right and good and all the exams and... What probably spurred off the fact that there was a little musician inside me was I used to like go on a trail of trying to make up songs while I was practicing. So I'd be practicing and then I get a bit bored of whatever I'm practicing.
Oh, and then you just
then
tinkle
away. Then
I
start tinkling and start trying to make up songs.
Yeah.
Then I started playing the songs at school functions.
Okay, so you were actually composing from quite a young age then?
Yes.
Even then?
Yes.
I'm interested in that relationship between, and I've spoken now, as I said, I mentioned while we were just chatting earlier, Asintu Nzuba, who the saxophonist that I interviewed a few weeks ago, and then Paul Hanma, who actually... He was the one who suggested I talk to you.
Sure.
I know you know each other quite well. Mm. I've spoken to both of them, being jazz musicians, but coming out of this classical background and what it offers you in terms of then the freedom or confidence to improvise, mm-hmm. and that space that jazz offers you mm-hmm. when it comes to improvisation. Mm-hmm. How do you see the relationship, just in terms of your own music, between your classical and your jazz mm-hmm. kind of backgrounds? How do they meet and how do they inspire you?
I think I'm actually really grateful for the classical foundation, because in many ways it sort of removed the need to work on technical things as much as maybe someone who may not have had the classical background. But it was a serious process of unlearning because it's a completely different way of thinking, you know. To compose spontaneously, which is essentially what improvisation is,
yeah.
is very scary for somebody who has always had music in front of them,
yeah.
And has just had to interpret what they see. So I think it was very challenging for me, but technically the foundation was great. And yeah. I think later in life, or not even later, whilst going through jazz, I gravitated to a lot of modern jazz.
Sort of Thelonious Monk or...
Well, Thelonious Monk, but my initial gravitation to jazz was the likes of Keith Jarrett, you know.
Okay.
I suppose maybe because he also has a classical background.
You can hear that so much,
yes,
can't
so
you?
So maybe there is a bit of a connection also with that.
Yeah.
And I actually feel like the way jazz is moving is becoming more classical. Jazz musicians, even the way they're writing, a lot of people are incorporating instruments that are very classical, you know, violin is being included. A lot of some of my favorite composers, at least, let me put it that way.
Okay.
So it's interesting. It's like coming full circle. But definitely was a great foundation in terms of technique.
Yes.
Yes.
And I suppose even within its... Because I've always imagined jazz to be completely kind of just free form, but mm-hmm. obviously it is also very structured mm-hmm. as well. So mm-hmm. I think what I'm interested in here is that sort of, okay, we've got the classical and the jazz, but we've also got the structure and the mm-hmm. improvisation. So mm-hmm. there's a big melting pot there, mm-hmm. isn't there?
No, that's true.
That's kind of opens possibilities.
Sure, sure. I mean, even improvisation is something that is not necessarily just pure chaos, and there is a method to the madness, so to speak.
Mm.
It's just, I suppose, what jazz teaches you is to learn your options and then to get really good at making choices.
How does the, I'm thinking particularly now playing live, how does the actual atmosphere and the relationship to the audience influence how you're going to play a certain piece that evening?
I think I really am a believer that energy is everything. So I do well in setups where I feel like everybody has sort of a sharing energy, or like, I don't know how to explain it, but they can be setups where I feel can feel very rigid and make me feel almost like
even live now.
Even live, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
But sort of very kind of staid environment, or were you not getting a vibe?
Where I'm not
audience?
Feeling a vibe. Not that I'm not getting a vibe, but I'm not necessarily feeling anything. Mm. And then sometimes I become too aware of the fact that I'm actually on stage now, and so I have to put something into this sort of space where I'm not really feeling what's happening, but
almost to create something.
Yes, yeah. But it's not something I like dwell on too much. Usually, when that happens, I just close my eyes, and when the music starts, it finds its flow.
Does it that whole situation? I imagine is also influenced by the musicians around you.
Yes, I would say. I mean, the musicians, I've been fortunate enough to play with musicians I know, and like the energy we work with, we take it where we go. So
yeah,
I've been.
Do you have pretty? Do you have a band? I mean, you have a pretty consistent now group of guys that you play with.
Sure.
Yeah.
And so when I'm in a space where maybe I'm not sure what I'm feeling from the audience, at least I know that okay, there is something that is familiar here. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
You. I mean, Benjamin Jafta is, I think, one of the longest of your collaborators.
The longest, yeah. Benjamin and then Keenan.
Yeah.
Me, yeah.
So I mean, when you look up, you know.
Yeah.
He's there. It's okay, yeah, it's kind like of thing.
It's all good.
Yeah. Let's now take a break and listen to Contemplation from Tandy's first album, The Offering. That you could work well together.
Him.
I mean, how does that whole process work? That you'd make a decision that, okay, that he's going to be my drummer or she's going to be my bassist or whatever. I mean, how does that all come about?
It's really like going shopping, I guess. If you pick, not that like.
Okay, Benjamin, you didn't hear that.
Yeah, I found him in a shop. but you just, there's people you connect with. May not even connect with them necessarily from having played with them, but when I first met Benjamin, he was at university. I was a few years his senior, and there was a gig that he played at, and I really loved his playing. And it's not just loving his playing because it was technical. Like, I really connected to his playing.
Yes.
And I just went to him and I'm like, please, can you play with my my band? You know, and I don't even know if we really knew each other. Huh. But then I started writing, and I had a trio at the time. There was a drummer called Ruben who was at Ruben Crowe, who was at university with us as well. And I think it's a...
So this is why you're still at university, right?
Yes, yes. Okay. So this is a bit of a mixture of us liking the same music, Benjamin and Ruben really vibing well together.
That's important, isn't it? The rhythm section.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think chemistry is everything, you know. And I think I build with chemistry as well. And Ruben, I think Ruben actually was on Benjamin's latest album as well, on one or two of the tracks. So they played amazingly together, and they played my music in a way that I enjoyed as well. At a later stage, started asking Keenan to play as well. And Keenan was, Keenan and I are the same age, but he was there before me because took a gap year.
Oh, at university?
Yes, right.
I don't know him.
The guitarist who plays with my band.
The band that played here about a month ago, the Birth of Cool.
Well, Keenan wasn't playing last month, but that's another project. That's not my music.
But some of the musicians.
Some of the musicians, yes. Mm. And I think from then it evolved like that. I think the first horn player really gelled with when I came to Joburg was Mtunzi, and at the time it was playing with the quintet. When I grew the band, it was about finding someone who blends well with him. Mm.
And being a female band leader in quite a sort of male... Well, definitely male-dominated world.
Yeah.
I mean, you're often the only woman on stage, I imagine, in that sort of context.
Mm-hmm.
How have you found that whole process? I mean, obviously, you've chosen the band members yourself, so you know there's not going to be any...
Strange vibes.
Any vibes. Yeah. But just being a woman in jazz... Mm-hmm. Do you find that you've had to, I mean, now you've reached another level, but I'm just thinking particularly in the early days, I mean, do people sort of, did people question your presence on stage?
Absolutely.
Question your position, question your motivation?
Absolutely. I mean, not with the band ever. I've never experienced that. They've never treated me like, oh, there's our woman band leader. Okay, let's listen to what she has to say now. certainly with maybe I'll do like a gig that I session for or whatever. I've had a lot of things that were just so silly. And I think at the time I didn't always realize that it's because I'm a woman. But in hindsight, I was like, actually, this is what was happening here, you know. I've had sound engineers who like second guess me when I say, can I please have some reverb? And they're like, are you sure you want reverb? And I'm like, yeah, I said I'd like reverb.
That's all I'm asking.
You know, those kind of like slightly condescending comments. I've had people say you play well for a woman a lot, yeah. and I mean, I think people don't even realize what they're saying because they really mean well. They're really excited.
Awesome.
Like, wow, how does it feel to be playing like a man? You're just like, I'm not really sure.
Not sure how that would work.
I'm not sure how that feels, you know. But I've also, with time and growing up, I've also toned down my irritation because I used to get so annoyed. But I also understand that with things that are novel, so people have to just kind of take time to.
Mm.
Get used to it.
When the Springboks team announced that they were appointing Siya Kolisi as the captain, and I mean, you just read some of the stuff on social media, the racist sort of vitriol that came out of that simple decision, considering, you know, that we're now 25 years into a post-apartheid mm-hmm. South Africa, it's like, I find it's still mind-boggling, mm-hmm. actually, that you get that. And I suppose it's a similar thing. People just, yeah. men in particular, we have to say.
Sure.
Men
but and
have
women
these.
Don't.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh, okay.
No, absolutely. And women. I mean.
Sorry, men.
No, men, definitely men. And obviously, mostly from men, because that's the experience you have, but from women as well. Mm. That does
patronizing
exist.
Patronizing kind of.
It's not the same type of condescending behavior, but it's there are, you know, times when people second guess you because you're a woman, from a woman as well, you know.
One of the, as I understand it, one of the things that, one of the events that lured you to Johannesburg in 2013 was Thandiswa Mazwai forming an all-female band.
Yes.
How did that all come about?
I actually love that story. Because I saw Thandiswa perform in Cape Town with her jazz band, the one she's recorded with now, but they hadn't recorded then.
Okay.
So it was Brahobi on the bass, Ayanda Skade on the drums, Nduduzo Makatini was on piano, and I think Mandla was playing trumpet, Mandla Mlangeni. And it was at the City Hall, and it blew me away. That's probably like one of the best concerts I've ever seen her.
Oh, wow.
And I just was like, I'd love to play with this woman. Mm.
Did you know her music before you saw
yes,
that?
Yes, I've been listening to her since she first came out with Bongo Muffin, and then later on with her own solo project.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I think that's when the seed was planted in me that I'd love to work with her one day. But obviously, there was just no idea of how that would ever happen. I don't know if it was a year or a few years later.
You were out of university by this stage.
I was out of university, but I was still living in Cape Town
and
working in Cape Town.
Yeah.
Then my friend calls me and she laughed and she's like, "You won't believe it. Thandiswa was holding auditions, but it's for an all-women band." So she knew my politics about all-women bands.
What was that?
It's mostly because I had been approached to play in all-women band.
You didn't think it was
that were for commercial reasons. Like it was about
sort of a novelty act kind of thing.
Yeah, it was more about being a woman band than it was about being
a good band.
A good band, and we happen to be women.
Yeah.
And I've never really liked that focus. Mm. So she said, "Yeah, but it's an all-women band," and I like had a bit of a cringe moment, but. Mm. Then I thought, you know what, Thandiswa was a very, like, she's an artist I've followed for years, and I don't think she'd make that kind of decision based on PR. I think it has a different intent behind it.
Mm.
So I went for it, came up to Johannesburg for auditions. I got in, and I was so excited. Then, obviously, because I had never played in like as a set member of a big artist band, mm-hmm. I really thought, you know, now it's like,
okay, that was your introduction to sort of life in a band.
Sure. And also just it was what sparked my decision to move up to Johannesburg, which I think it was such a great move at such a great time. And I played in that band and it was a great experience for me. And it was also absolutely a great way of, because a lot of people, you know, they come to watch the band, some people to watch the band, some people to see, let's see how this is going to work out, you know. And people came and they saw that actually, you know, this is happening, you know. I mean, the rhythm section is great. Nozipho Mngwenya, who plays drums in that band, is just like incredible. As well as Portia on the bass. So that band was just really like my introduction to the Josie scene. And from there, I started getting bookings as well from other people.
Mm-hmm.
That was a great, great.
Never looked back.
Never looked back.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And you're still in touch with her?
Yes, very much so. Yeah, very much so.
Because she just had that big all-woman concert, wasn't
it? Yes, I actually played at that one as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, it was a fantastic, fantastic
night out.
Mm. Yeah.
I did see some photographs. Mm. I wanted to ask you about, because you play a piano and you also play a keyboard, an electronic keyboard.
Mm.
And I'm just wondering sort of what the various instruments give to you, mm-hmm. in terms of the sound that you're trying to create.
Mm-hmm. Well, excuse me. The piano obviously is the first love and will always be the first love. Mm. But what I think the keyboard, and I think it's the Rhodes, but because I don't have a Rhodes, mm. so I end up using a keyboard most of the time.
I did hear that Rhodes kind of sound, I yes. think, on the offering in particular, yes, quite, yes, a, quite
yes.
a bit.
Yes, it's not actually a Rhodes. It's no, just
but
a
as yes, that, yeah.
yeah. It's, I love the Rhodes, and I love just how it changes the texture of the music. Mm. I've heard something I watched with Herbie Hancock talking about how he just loves how the Rhodes blends with instruments in a very different way, mm. that, and it cuts through in a very different way.
Yeah, it does have a particular yes, tone, doesn't it?
And, and like a frequency to it, which yeah. I absolutely love that.
Yeah. It's kind of very distinctive without being sort of overbearing,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like almost like it creates a very carpet-y kind of
warmth
to yeah. the music, which yeah. I love.
Mm.
So I think that's what it is. It's not. Mm. I think the movement towards playing a lot more Rhodes has been the taste of music and the way I'm writing.
Mm.
It's always that's always what governs the direction. Yeah.
How has your because you the offering is now 5 years. Should we say 5 years old? And now
four,
you
for yeah four years yeah
four. Mm. And now your recent album Exiled. Has just been released.
Yes.
How would you sort of analyze your musical journey from The Offering 4 years ago to Exiled, which has just come out this year?
Mm, that's a heavy question. I think the Offering was really, we could say The Offering was a songbook or a collection of music that I had been writing over the years in varsity. And I guess I could say those were really the first jazz compositions that I was writing. And putting it out there, The Offering was really just my introduction to, or introducing myself rather, mm. to the world.
You were offering.
Yes.
You were The Offering.
Yes.
Mm.
Exiled, I think there's definitely a lot more comfort with who I am, with my choices in music, my... And there's a lot more of my ideas outside of music coming through the music. Definitely all of this is first and foremost sparked by where I am in life at the time. And I do think you can hear that because, I mean, with The Offering, I was a lot younger.
Mm.
My brain, my thinking was a lot younger. But now I think I'm a little bit older. There's a few more things that I would like to say, I guess you could say, or express, or there's a few more things I was working out, if that makes sense.
Mm. Mm. What do you, I mean, because Exiled for me is kind of sounds lonely. But
No one's ever described it as that before, but I think
I'm just saying the title of the album, I mean the word Exiled,
yes,
is a kind of,
oh, I see what you mean. Okay.
I'm not talking about the music, sure. itself, because it's a very rich and diverse album. But
I think
it seems to me that the title almost goes against what the music's trying to say.
No, because I think you're right in that it is introspective, very interesting. I think it would be a very introspective album. The title Exiled. I guess it was a really strong word to use, particularly as a South African,
you know,
with the history that we have. But I think I wanted to use it artistically because I feel that the word has many layers. Post-apartheid South Africa, there's many ways that I can still see a lot of exile existing in our society. And there's a lot of how that plays into, you know, our personal experiences, you know. So there was a lot of personal experiences, but also me reflecting on how the past has been an influencer on that, I guess, yeah. I'll be honest in saying it's been very difficult for me to actually describe or explain, because I feel like having been at every part of the creation process, I realize how layered it is, both the music, the title.
Right, it's so from composition layered. To from recording to...
Yes, it's extremely
the
layered.
The whole process. Yeah.
But I guess you could say I feel content in the fact that it's very layered and very sort of hazy, because it does actually sort of, in a weird way, express how I feel about where I'm at in the world today, or where we are in South Africa today. Mm. It feels very... It's got that sort of unsettledness that our generation sort of has.
Yeah. Do you feel that that's kind of where we are as a nation right now, is kind of...
Unsettled. I think as a nation, we are probably becoming more aware, or maybe not, but I think we're becoming more aware of the fact that apartheid wasn't just something that could be sort of remedied by the coining of a rainbow nation and hoping that it will all go away. And I think a lot of things that we hoped would sort of stay under the carpet are creeping out now. So in that sense, I do think we are very unsettled. I think our generation has a very strange insecurity with all the opportunities and everything that we have. There's a strange insecurity about where we're at. That's, I guess, my perspective on it. Mm. Yeah.
Because at the same time, you do get a sense, well, I get a sense, and I've mentioned this in a couple of the interviews, particularly in the arts and in music and in jazz, and especially for like young black women like yourself in jazz, it seems that there's like the sky's the limit almost, that there's so much potential.
For sure.
But at the same time, we are still sort of yet, I think, to perhaps fully confront the legacy of our past.
Absolutely. And I think the most pressing issue of the legacy of our past is the spiritual aspect of how it's affected us as a nation, both white and black people. I think racism is a spiritual defect, basically. I think there's every sort of oppression or every sort of ideology that is oppressive to another group, for me, is a sign of spiritual decay, basically. And I think maybe that's, again, why I say there's a lot of layeredness to it. I find like there's an onion that we keep peeling. And when we deal with things as a nation, generally how we go about it is talking about the issue, you know. We're talking about, you know, crime as an isolated issue, as though it exists in and of itself. But we're not linking crime to everything, you know. We talk about, I mean, even something as seemingly, you know, isolated as femicide and how women are being killed by their spouses almost daily, if not daily.
Yeah.
A lot of me wonders if that is also not part of the legacy in terms of dealing with really healing the nation in a way that makes such things impossible to happen.
Yeah, I mean, that particularly violence against women and yeah, the seemingly endless cycle now of violence against children, against women, does seem to speak to some psychosis.
Sure, absolutely.
That we are in.
Yes, And it's kind of like it's kind of like being put in a situation where, that's why I say like the irony is that there's so much possibilities now. So we're kind of always made to feel as a generation that we should feel grateful for the possibilities and everything without really expressing how we feel, expressing our discontent with, or just like,
or putting anything in context,
putting anything in context, being able to just say, "I'm actually angry. I feel, you know, diminished by certain experiences that I still have to experience today," and that build up constantly, continuously, it has to go somewhere.
Yeah.
So I think, for me, the way I see it is that all these issues in our society are really a cry out for a more deeper level of healing that needs to take place in our country.
Well, yeah, beyond healing, isn't it? I mean, it's like, I still think there's just so much on a structural level that needs to happen as well, you know, just to kind of try and normalize the society that we live in that is so abnormal.
Well, that is part of it, I think, all of that is part of the healing, I think.
Mm.
On
a happier note, you've traveled a lot now recently as well, haven't you? You've just come back from Holland.
Yes.
You were also in Amsterdam, I think, on your way in and out of... Where was it that you were playing?
I was in Amersfoort.
Amersfoort, yes.
Which is... I'm not sure if it's north or south, but it's somewhere in... somewhere in Holland too.
Got on a train, got there.
Had a great time.
Nice time to be in Europe.
Yeah.
But you've traveled quite a bit.
This year, yes, I have.
Well, just over the last couple of years. I mean,
yeah.
What do you find most exciting about traveling? Is it just getting out of here and traveling? Is it meeting different musicians? Mm. Is it vibing with different audiences? Is it a whole... I mean, what are your enjoyments when it comes to going on the road? Because, I mean, going on the road, I understand it can also be quite a strain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have... I mean, the traveling has been varied. There have been parts of the travel which haven't been as strenuous because, for example, in February, I went on tour to Mozambique. That was a tour that I organized myself with Concerts SA's support. That is very strenuous because of all the administrative...
He's taking
all that responsibility. But I enjoy traveling because I find it very enriching as an artist to be in a different environment. And the thing I always love and take back from travel is how similar we are. No matter how different the cultures may be, people want the same things, people like the same things, people are made happy by the same thing, you know. Mm. A simple thing like in Amsterdam, it was so... Apparently, when we got there, we came with the sun because there had been a few cold days before. And everybody was just sitting outside. So my niece is studying there, and I asked her, is it like tourist season? Like, she's like, not really yet, but when the sun comes out, everyone just sits outside.
Mm.
That's what people do because
they love the sunshine.
I'm like, you know, and those simple things that make you realize that, you know, everybody loves the sunshine. And, you know, I love traveling for that. I love being out of my comfort zone in that way.
Mm.
It teaches me a lot about myself as well.
Just in terms of how you relate to other people,
how you're
influenced by other music, and
how I'm influenced by different spaces. That I love picking up on the energy of different cities.
Mm.
There definitely is an energy that I'm really drawn to in Amsterdam. I really like the energy
that
of that city.
That is a beautiful city. Yeah.
The
water, the canals. Yes,
the water everywhere. It's like you feel like you're not really in a city, but
there's
lots of nature there. So I love it. And people are quite friendly generally.
Yeah. I lived in Stockholm for many years, and it's also on the water, canals and things like that, bridges. And
it's beautiful.
Yeah, and it does make a difference to a city, I think.
Yeah, and it just has, like, you just realize that there's so much to life, and it makes you think about the way you live your life, where you're at, and what's important to you, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, another thing, again, on the sitting outside thing, is just people hanging out and sitting and talking. And I think we are totally in need of that. we're in need of connecting more. Our generation is, like, suffering from, like, social media.
Yeah.
You know, I do think those things are really interesting. Simple things, but...
I mean, that's a lot less kind of face-to-face interaction.
People are just sitting on the devices, you know, and... We can be out together having dinner, and we're all on our phones documenting it.
Taking a photograph of everything that
happens. Yeah, and I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I just... It's something that I noticed is, like, okay.
Different.
Yeah.
I just want to talk a little bit about influences, but more, there's been reference to some of the stuff I've read about your work. I mean, I don't pretend to be an expert in jazz music, and I have listened to to both The Offering and Exiled. I have listened to both of your albums, but I don't know if I'm an expert enough to sort of analyze it in the context of jazz or South African jazz. But I mean, it has been mentioned that you take influences from, for example, Morocco, Ethiopia, Mali, places like that. Do you consciously go out and listen to music from a wide variety of sources, or is that music that you've just sort of bumped into along the way and thought, oh, that's pretty cool, let me kind of tinker with that a bit?
I think particularly with Malian music that I stumbled across. Omo Sangare's music when I was still in varsity.
That's Mali.
Yes, that's Mali. Yeah. But I mean, I had grown up also listening to Salif Keita as well, so it's not like it was my first introduction. But
that was a particular...
Did something to me.
Yeah.
But
what was that?
I don't know what it did, but it just like.
But is it the melodies? Is it the tempo?
It's just the whole thing. I was just very, very drawn to her music.
Because the instruments are quite different as well, and the structure is quite
different.
Yes,
the instruments
are.
I think for me, I find her less commercial, so it's a bit more raw. And over time, I think I've become a little bit more deliberate about listening to music from the continent, from different countries, because I guess back to the subject of healing, part of my personal journey of getting healing in a sense is me always wondering how it would be to have been influenced more by home, where I'm from, so the continent. Having grown up consuming a lot of R&B, a lot of...
American tradition.
A lot of American music, you know.
Yeah.
And I have a very strong, you know, desire to let myself be sort of a way of preserving our traditions, even if it's not necessarily in their pure form, but...
Yeah. That you'll still always have a sense of what a South African jazz sound or an African sound.
African, yeah. I think more the entire continent, because I don't feel restricted to being like just South African. And so I think that's where it all comes from. My deliberate reaching for African music.
Your pan-Africanism.
My pan-Africanism. There we go. Make it sound very intellectual. But really, it's just a love for our music and just a fascination with how much wealth there is here. Yeah.
In terms of our
cultures.
Yeah. I mean, it was only, I think, in perhaps the last 10 or 15 years that I was exposed to that whole Ethiopian jazz sound. Mm-hmm. And that just absolutely...
Yes, it's just gorgeous.
You think, like, what the hell? How did, you know, how did I not know about this before?
Yes, but
and I suppose we kind of sit in the southern in the southern tip here, and especially, you know, growing up under apartheid, there was there was a barrier. Mm. You know, we are not exposed to any of that stuff. Yes. I mean, it was just by chance that, you know, a friend of mine had a King Sunny Ade album. You know, the Nigerian musician, Synchro Systems, I think it was called. And that also was just one of them. And that was this was probably back in 1985 or something like that. Unheard of that we would be listening to that kind of music as lads in Durban. But I did belong to a group that wanted to just absorb as much from everywhere. Mm-hmm. But I suppose those are just little door openings, aren't they, to the journey that you will... let me just go try this and try this and try this. But you have to be open to it in the first place, don't
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely. And I always think, like, for an American, they must... they are so advantaged in that way that they probably feel at home anywhere in the world, because wherever you go in the world, there's an in-depth knowledge of the American cultural music, the hip-hop, whether it's funk music, whether it's R&B, whether it's rock, whatever it is. And it's been a great gift to the world.
But are you consciously almost trying to move away from those influences?
No, because that would be like sort of denying the love I have for certain music. It's not moving away as much as it is really just seeking out to be influenced by what is around me as well, you know? Yeah. I mean, it blows my mind that I know of... It's even beyond just music. I know so much about American culture. Like, I know where the jazz spots are. You know, if you ask me, where would you go watch jazz in Namibia? I would be like, I don't know.
But
New York, I'll tell you. You know, if an American person comes and cracks a joke culturally, I'll be able to understand, you know.
Yeah.
They might not seem like big things, but I think they are big for me personally.
What are the next steps now in your... you've got the album out, Exiled. Mm-hmm. Are you touring with that now? Or what does the rest of the year look like for you?
I've got some performances. I'm going to be at the Market Theatre next month, which is really exciting.
That's cool. From what day? What day to what day?
20th and 21st of July.
Of July. Mm. Okay.
And
cool. I'll definitely look out for that.
Sure. And I'm also planning to be performing later on in the year. Nothing confirmed yet, but hopefully doing some performances outside of the country as well. Mm. I guess in terms of, you know, I've been working towards more things. I'm always working on more music, so we'll see where that goes.
Does the process of putting together material for another album begin immediately now, or is that something you can't even really consider? Or
I don't know if you could say you can't really consider it, but it depends. I mean, sometimes I will have an idea and I'm like, this is what I actually want to do. I want to put this together. I have ideas of albums I'm not even ready yet for, but I've already got the idea of the album in my head. I know exactly what I want to do with it. I know exactly like what I want the artwork to sort of look like. And then I've got...
But why you say you're not ready?
Because in terms of research, in terms of like doing the research musically.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not ready in that sense. Sorry.
No. It's fascinating just to think about it in that sense as well, that it is quite a structured approach that you need to
do
follow.
Research. Yeah, well, it's what I want to express. You know, there's lots of songs that I have in my catalog on my phone and voice notes and whatever, songs that are not recorded yet, but
don't lose your phone.
I'm going I've lost many phones. It's okay.
Backup.
My real thing is about putting out music that I want to put out as Tandy, and then some songs I can give to people to perform whatever. Mm-hmm. But that's the stuff that is really thought out, I think. Well, since Exiled. Make it sound like I've got 10 albums.
t- Tandi, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Nicholas. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been fun. And I'll hope to see you at the Market Theatre in July.
No problem. See you then.
We'll end this episode with a track from Tandi's latest album. It was released earlier this year. The track is called 13. that was good fun. I really enjoyed that, and I hope you did too. If you're a jazz fan and you don't know of Tandy, then please look out for her albums, The Offering and Exiled. If you're in Johannesburg, Tandy and her band are playing at the Market Theatre on the 20th and 21st of July. That will be a special experience for any jazz aficionado. Please remember to subscribe in iTunes, where you can leave a rating or a comment, and remember that any rating is very important for me in order to reach a wider audience, which I'm trying to do every week. The podcast is also available on Spotify, Radio Public, or wherever you get your podcasts. Tell your colleagues, tell your friends, tell the world. Until next time, I'm Nicholas Claude. Cheers.